I'm speaking with Eric Morgan, Assistant Fire Management Officer with the U.S. Forest Service. And my phone rang, and I'm sorry about that. Welcome, Eric, and thanks for taking the time to talk with me today. Let's start with just a little bit about you. Oh, yeah, hi. You can say hi. And let's talk a little bit about you and what you do at the Forest Service. Anyways, so yeah, tell us about you.
Okay, so yeah, my name's Eric Morgan. I'm the Assistant Fire Management Officer with the U.S. Forest Service, based out of Sandpoint at the Sandpoint Ranger District. I started my career in 1994 on the Bonners Ferry Ranger District, and I grew up in North Idaho, mostly in the Silver Valley area. So I've been a captain here out of Sandpoint, assistant captain and a captain since 2003. I bounced around a little bit earlier on in my career to other parts of the West, and a lot of most areas from Central Idaho all the way up through North Idaho. So
when you say captain of what, a fire response team? Or
so captain is you could be a captain of an engine module, so supervising up to 10 people, supervising fire engines. And most recently I was a captain of a wildland fire module, which is a crew of 7 to 12 individuals that go on to fires and help manage these fires out in the backcountry. You're a crew of, around 10 with a self-supportive. You bring 2 weeks worth of food for 2 week assignments. They tuck you out somewhere in remote places and you support yourself logistically, operationally, and do a lot of the planning, intel, and operations for a fire or a certain part of a fire.
On a big fire like the one at Trestle Creek, which seems like a big fire to us, I guess, as lay people, how many crews would you have out there with a captain of each crew, possibly?
So currently there's two crews of 20. Out there. Those are two of the hand crews. And in addition to that, there's a wildland fire module of 10. There's a number, half a dozen or so of engines that each have about 300 gallons of water on them. Those folks are doing structure protection and plans, putting together a plan in the event a fire does encroach those values at risk down in the lower parts. All of these resources combined with the heavy equipment, timber processors, dozers, whatever we've got, all of those resources work under they're managed by a fire team, which is a overhead team who takes care of, you have an incident commander who is in charge of that team. Under the incident commander, you have folks like a safety officer, you have an operations chief who is in charge of all those resources. You have division supervisors who work under that operations chief for span of control on different parts of the fire. You have somebody supporting those ground resources with logistics, making sure they're getting food and water, supplies. We have public information officers. We have resource advisors who work for the rangers. They're part of that to keep that communication going for the resources on the ground. That's just to name a few of the functions that work for this team. This is a Type 3 team, which manages fires like this one. If you go to a Type 2 team, that's a little bit larger team. You could have anywhere from 20 to 40 personnel with that team. And those folks would manage a larger fire, more complex, more values at risk. And then a Type 1 team would be managing even larger complex fires, around big communities, a lot of stuff going on. So those teams are based on complexity, with type one being the most complex. The type three team is least complex. And when you go to a type four and five, those are more the initial attack, you know, not extended period of time like we're dealing with on the Trestle Creek fire. So that might be a, you know, anywhere from a 1 day to 1 week fire, or a downsizing of this fire. As we get in more into the fall months and things are downsizing, a type four, small type four organization would take that over and most likely be a local incident commander who's a type four IC.
So when you say that, say a 1 acre fire comes up, or a 2 acre fire, that would be like one and two might respond to that. But then who makes a determination? It's getting out of hand. The wind is up. We're not going to be able to contain this. We're moving to a stage three. Who makes the final decisions on where we're going on a fire, to call in extra, you know, to change the type it is?
The simplest typing of fire is a type five. So that'd be a lightning strike, single tree in the middle of the brush, not doing much. So we send out that initial attack resource from our local organization here. We have a number of type five ICs. If it's going to be much more than a half acre, an acre, or things are getting more complex with more air resources being involved, you know, managing, you know, a couple crews and some air resources, engines, whatnot, that lifts the complexity to a type four, just for span of control and organization there. So you get a little more experienced IC on a type four. And in this country, you know, that could be, you know, for example, a 20 acre fire, could be a 100 acre fire if it's not extreme conditions, just all depending. You go down to the Southwest and other areas, you have a different fuel type. The fires, if you catch them quick in a grassier fuel type, it might be pretty simple and the fire goes out within days if you catch it. Whereas here, you get a 20 acre fire and you can plan on being, you know, at least 2 weeks to 3 or 4 weeks on something like that, depending on the resources you have, just because a lot more heavier logs and brush, steep terrain, tougher country to manage fire in.
I got my types mixed up when I was asked that question, but so when a type five moves to a four, then someone decides, hey, this is no longer a type four. We're moving up really fast here. The weather conditions have changed. Lightning strikes have happened. We're moving to a type three or two. Who makes that decision, determination?
So the IC, we have a book that every IC brings with them, and it has a complexity analysis, which you go through a 10-step process, if you will. You go through and check the boxes, and it helps guide you toward your decision. That's kind of more in that type five to four range. When we get an ongoing fire that we know we're going to be dealing with for a while, we have it's a computer program. It's a decision, wildland fire decision support system. And you do a risk assessment. You look at the values at risk. You look at the time of year. You look at all the fire indices, how hot and dry we are. You look at the expected weather, and with that, the expected fire behavior we can expect. And that guides you through a process, and it'll actually give you a guide on what type of fire this should be. And it'll help you determine whether you need to order a type three team or a type two team or a type one team.
So that's the incident commanders that go through that together. It sounds like there's a bit of collaboration in that. So this, we'll just stick with the Trestle Creek fire for a moment. Is that a type three?
It is a type three.
Okay. And you're not, unless conditions change drastically, that's where it's staying until it starts into the fall, as you said. And cooler.
Yeah, as we start getting into late August, and into September. A typical fire season ender would be like mid-September for us. Not saying all the fires will be out, but that's definitely a time when fire season starts to come down. We have been having longer fire seasons with more fire on the ground, but typically beyond that time period, we don't expect. The days are shorter, the burn periods are shorter. We get better relative humidity recoveries, maybe a shot of moisture or two.
Yeah.
You know, things start to get cooler and settle down. Not saying that we can't have a bad day in that, because the primary driver of fire is wind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if things are aligned right and the fuels are conditioned, you could have a bad day. But that's kind of our typical scenario, if you will.
So we had some moisture recently, basically, and that probably helped give everybody a little break, a little bit of relaxation, at least. But how would you describe this fire season? You kind of have touched on it a little bit. Is it worse than normal? Is it, and what are the mitigating situations or the clear indicators of how this season is going?
So yeah, just a little bit of background. We had a really dry spring, not much moisture, you know, since April. We didn't get our typical rains. It's been unusually hot and dry. Some areas have recorded, you know, the driest we've been in 140 years, you know, since we've been recording there. So we went in pretty hot and dry. Everything was elevated. We were crushing all of our records for fuels and dryness. As we got into more recently with those little shots of moisture, that helped bring down a lot of those indices. It brought them back down into just above normal, rather than way out of line. So now we're back in toward, you know, more normalization, but we still have a lot of fire season left. You know, it just depends on what the rest of the summer looks like. But one thing we do know is if you look at those trends and graphs, typically from this time of year, chances are we won't have a super sharp increase. But with the weather next week, we could see those start to climb back up. But this moisture really bought us some more time to get us through a little bit later in the season. By the time things heat back up and come back, we're getting into those shorter days. We're getting more toward the month of September, when things will typically simmer down.
Well, simmer down, that's a good word. So we were talking earlier on the phone about the importance of fire management. You know, a lot of people say, you'll hear that the forests aren't managed well, and that's why we have a problem. I don't know from talking to you and others that that's the case. Can you just elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, it's pretty dynamic, you know, just different parts of the country, different fuel types, different weather conditions. You know, some areas are windy, some areas aren't. For example, here in the Idaho Panhandle, you know, Northern Rockies area, we've got a lot of ground that, you know, has been heavily cut and managed from a timber perspective. We've been suppressing fires for a long time. So we, you know, since like the early 1900s, we've really tried to stomp everything out that we can. You know, we have identified areas recently that we could fire in, and that we've identified areas, you know, all over the country, areas that you can look at managing fire with taking an educated risk based on the time of year. Are there values at risk near there? And what is the probability and likelihood of that fire reaching any values at risk? So on any given year, we're constantly looking into three main things. To simplify it, as the fuels, what their state is for that year, the weather, what the weather's been, what we expect it to do, and the ground, the topography, and where it's at. So we look at that, and you know, fire management is one of our largest tools that's been around for, you know, millions of years, for managing the vegetation on the landscape. And you know, unfortunately, you know, things are a bit out of balance in a lot of areas, but you know, we've been seeing a lot of these larger fires. A lot of the landscape, if you look at it, it looks pretty consistent fuel wise. The best thing for it is to have areas that are managed by timber management where it makes sense. And then we go in and we reintroduce fire and try to hit the reset button on that piece of ground. Other areas that we're likely to never cut or manage timber in, you know, a lot of those areas, it makes sense to take advantage of fire and put it to work for us to plug another hole in the landscape and create another mosaic, you know, with multiple objectives for everything from, you know, fisheries and putting down woody debris into the streams and more habitat for insects and nutrient cycling into the streams all the way down and out to the ocean. You could look at it from wildlife perspective to white bark pine restoration in the high country, which actually needs fire. Since we've lost a lot of that white bark pine, those openings need to be reopened to help regenerate white bark pine for Clark's Nutcracker, grizzly bear habitat, you name it, and fire resiliency in the landscape. So we look at every year differently. We get direction from the chief and out of the Washington office on what we're allowed to do any given year. For example, this year, the most recent letter has said, you know, no managing fire anywhere, just based on the fires that we have going on all over the place. So most of our fires are either contain if we have no other option, like the Trestle Creek fire, with the lack of resources and the complexity of the ground, and there we don't have enough to go in and go direct on a fire that large in that steep and challenging terrain.
If the wind shifted on that fire and started moving towards Rapid Lightning, and where there's a lot of homes and people, then it would be a different decision would come into play. Like you might bring in air support, air water support, or something like that. But right now, what you're saying, I think I'm hearing you say, is because of the terrain it's in and because of the ability to even get in there and do anything, sometimes it's just kind of managing it until time moves forward.
Yeah, we've, you know, for this whole fire, it has been a full suppression strategy. We're really looking hard into the options and where we could be successful with a direct, if you will, tactics. And that was using the crews that we had available. We could not fill a lot of our crews with the national need out there. So we weren't able to get a lot of the resources we would have liked to have had. We used all the aircraft that we could get our hands on, put a lot of aircraft on these fires to keep things in check, taking advantage of natural barriers, using helicopters for putting, you know, thousands of gallons of water on bits and pieces. We use fire bosses nonstop in, you know, a couple areas of a fire retardant. But so we did do a lot of full suppression tactics. Just happened to be, you know, the fire was in a upper elevation area right on the ridgetop where you have a spruce subalpine fir, which is more flashier timber fuel type. And we got a northeast wind, which does not happen that often, and it was a strong one. And there happened to be some fire up in the head end of that drainage right on the ridgetop. And the time and place was just right or wrong, however you look at it from a fire perspective. And it those ridgetop winds were strong and it blew down along that divide in that subalpine fir, flashier timber type, and made a run toward the lower Trestle Creek area. However, we haven't seen those northeast winds since. The fire has gotten out of that fuel type. It's dropped in elevation. It's burning more in a brush, Douglas fir, heavier timber fuel model type, and more on the ground, just doing a low intensity, slow moving fire for really the last 10 days since that run. And that's typically what we can expect to see, given there isn't any crazy wind event and heating and drying.
Right. Wow. I'm speaking with Eric Morgan, Assistant Fire Management Officer with the U.S. Forest Service. And Eric, we are running out of time. We could go on because you're living this day in and day out, experiencing, watching for those wind shifts and, every single aspect. It's very complex. It's diverse information and a lot of different groups, but the Forest Service and the area that you manage is the forest, and it's not the county lands. It's not the Idaho Department of Lands. It's the U.S. forests. And that's a huge amount of land when you talk about fire management and or brush control or logging. It's a huge amount of land, and it's all, especially in this part of the country. So I really want to thank you for joining me today, but do you have any, I know a lot of people want to get as much information because this, we don't know what's going on sometimes. And so our listeners, how do they get more information about any particular fire or incident that's going on right now? Where would they go?
So, the Forest Service Idaho Panhandle has a social media is one tool. They have Facebook and all of that stuff. The most detailed, broad information for any fire in the country is INCIWEB, INCIWEB. And INCIWEB website will just let you click around the country and click on a fire, and you'll get anything from photographs to a daily status update on that fire, what's being done, and what they expect to see on that fire for the outlook. So INCIWEB really is the best tool. You can see maps as well and know where it's at on the landscape and what's going on. So those are the most informative pieces. We have public information officers with a lot of these teams who really set up a trap line, they call it, and they go to those communities and the areas around where the fire is, and they post flyers with the information in those web links to get more information. We have also have a phone line. I believe it's a 1-800 CDA fire. That might be one of the areas to call and check if you do it by phone.
Well, okay. But,
that information is on those flyers as well, is who you call.
Okay.
Because if a team has it, they have a different phone number and you can call directly to the team that's managing that fire and talk directly to somebody there. So
by the time we air this interview, we'll have already heard from Pam Onan, who is one of the people on a fire watch.
And she's a lookout. Yep.
Yep. And so there's a lot of parts to keeping everything. What's your final word that you would say to just the listeners here about how to, if they see something, what they should do, and how to be in the forest, how to be safe, and how to think about this a little bit?
So yeah, I think one thing to understand is there's a lot that goes into fire and fire management. A lot of decisions get made, and I think a good public support for those decisions is important, good relationship building, and education is huge for fire. It's definitely a dynamic process. You know, I've spent 28 years studying it through school and in my career. Still learning something different every day. It's so dynamic that you're never going to be 100%. You got to understand that it's not something that can be can always be addressed to everybody's liking. It's something that we have to learn to live with. It's been around for millions of years. We've got a lot of catching up to do in management of vegetation out on the ground. And it's going to take everybody's best efforts and support to help get us back to the balance that we really need to be at, to have communities that are more fire resistant and fire resilient with fire, because there's no getting out of it. We're going to be dealing with it and taking advantage of all the tools we have and making smart, wise decisions is pretty key. And as far as what folks can do is, play by the rules. There are, 87% of our fires nationally are human caused. So, those human caused fires, most all of those are always fully suppressed. We never manage human caused ignitions for resource benefit. So, it's important for folks to do their part to spread education and awareness and do the right thing and help make our jobs easier, as we usually have enough fire going out on the ground with natural ignitions that keeps our hands full. So,
okay. So in other words, be careful, be smart out in the forest, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, Eric Morgan from the U.S. Forest Service, thank you so much for joining me today and taking time. I'm sure what I would call valuable time. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, thanks for the opportunity, and it's been a pleasure. Thank you.